Chapter 8. Non-compliance. The Imperium was to put its demands to the comptrollers, princes, and factor generals of the Carinian Sodality one last time. Corvus Corax decided to deliver the message himself. For additional impact, he did so from the parliamentary chamber of the captured city of Retrograde 48. Hololith equipment taken from the stores of Fink's flagship, the Song-He, was hastily erected in the chamber. Frequency tether bulbs blinked unsurely from composition desks. Image capture and transmission arches rose up beside golden statues. Loop projectors buzzed, waiting to be brought to full activation. There were cables numerous and twisted as a plague of serpents all over the floor. Taken out of its housing, the hololithic technology was an ugly chaos. At Korax's insistence, the makeshift setup was to be hidden from the Carinians, so they would see only the Imperial leadership occupying the centre of government of one of the most powerful moons. There was to be space in the display matrix for representatives of every one of the thousand moons, so they all could speak, should they so wish. 1,000 discrete projection fields required accommodation. The cogitator power needed was immense. This presented a further technical challenge. Fink oversaw the work himself. Corax selected as his stage the speaker's platform. It had been cleared of the chairs of the 7 ministers who had, until their recent executions, run the city. The rear of the hall was free of machinery, allowing the architecture of the chamber to serve as a backdrop, placing Corax firmly in the context of the Sodality. He was its conqueror, and therefore now a part of it. Upon the platform were set 24 Imperial officers of various types, selected mainly on the basis of how exotic and intimidating they would appear to the system inhabitants. Fink strode about the chamber with a gaggle of aides-de-camp in tow, speaking with his officers and the adepts. His work was required, but his input was not. He would not have denied, were he asked, that he was delaying taking his place among the rest of the dignitaries. Having his command suborned to the Primarch was bearable. Being used as a prop in a diplomatic show was beneath him. Corax entered the Parliament without Fink noticing, and moreover the Primarch drew very close before he did. The Primarch was so forceful in presence that it should have been impossible to step into the large hall without news of his entrance spreading to all quarters, and yet suddenly Corax was walking across the wide-open space of the debating floor without any hint of his arrival. A murmur of surprise informed Fink he wasn't the only one to be caught out. Work ground to a halt. A babble of voices, torn between dismay and amazement, filled the room. The Admiral experienced a clench of fear that Corax had been there for several minutes, watching him unobserved. From a rational standpoint, that was implausible. Experience told Fink it was more than likely. The galaxy was a much stranger place than the Imperial truth allowed. He masked his misgivings well and saluted crisply, but the Primarch would have seen his fear. They always seemed to know.
"Preparations are complete?" Corax asked.
He was an odd being, thought Fink. Affable in some regards, certainly more so than many of his brothers. But like all of the Primarchs, he had a sureness about him that crossed the line to arrogance, and in Corax this was exacerbated by the distance inherent to his manner. They could not be friends, not ever. Fink knew this with complete certainty.
"I nearly saw, my lord," said Fink.
He reported on matters that could have been left to a junior lieutenant. Pride and a desire to stand firm in front of Corax made him speak, ramrod straight, as if he were on parade.
"There have been a few difficulties integrating our machinery with the power systems of this city, and further issues to overcome regarding the compatibility of the Sodality's Tri-D technology with the Hololith to create a remote audience of this scale. The conference before worked well enough, but this is a more ambitious undertaking. Majos Burnt tells me that the more compartmentalized the incoming feeds, the more the divergence between our technologies becomes apparent. Some mismatch in data rate for the ribbon projectors, apparently."
He gestured towards Major Spurnt, whose defining feature was a mass of writhing mechadendrites lashing about over his stooped back.
"It's been resolved. This message must be delivered flawlessly."
"Yes, my lord," said Fink. "All is prepared."
He resisted the urge to continue speaking.
"Good,"
said Korax. He moved closer.
"This is an important moment in this compliance."
At a distance of 2 meters, Fink could look Korax in the face without craning his neck. But up close, the angles were wrong. His spine cracked as he strained to keep the Primarch's eye. The back of his head rubbed on his heavy brocade collar.
"I fervently wish that your plan works, my lord," said Fink.
He did not believe it would. When a new commander came breezing into an established war zone, they always had new ideas and better ways of doing things. Sometimes those methods worked. Often they could not. A newcomer did not take into account factors that were, to those already present, glaringly obvious. Fink had seen this mistake made by all confident men assuming new positions of command, from maintenance crew overseers to the Primarchs themselves. No one was immune to hubris. Fink was a military man through and through, but he was a good judge of character. He suspected the same held true of any human hierarchy. Power came with blinkers.
"There is a use for weaponized information," Korax said. "Propaganda is its own bladed edge."
"We are ready, my lord,"
spoke Major Spurnt.
"Thank you,"
Fink and Korax said together. Korax gave Fink a little smile that flustered Fink. Korax stepped up onto the stage, taking his place at the fore of the assemblage. Fink reluctantly joined him. His place was at the front, as his office demanded.
"Begin, then," said Korax.
Major Spurnt bowed. Under normal circumstances, the mechanisms of a hololith were hidden away. In the parliamentary chamber, its guts were on open display. Boards of lights twinkled. Shining flywheels spun and stopped and spun again. The tether bulbs pulsed and shone true. The pale light of image collection beams shone on the group, and through the mechanisms arranged around them, sent their tri-D-vid phantoms system-wide.
"People and governments of the Karanai Sodality," the Primarch began. "When we spoke yesterday, you were of a single mind not to heed the generous offer of the Imperium. We speak again today, when I am in possession of 8 of your cities. These 8 were taken within 3 hours of each other by a small portion of the forces available to me. There were, regrettably, deaths, included among them the 7 elected lords who ruled this city of Retrograde 48.
Operators interjected hololithic pictures of the captured cities into the feed. Their exteriors were crowded by Imperial warships, better showing the huge size of the vessels Korax commanded. But included also were interior flat-vid feeds of thoroughfares busy with people moving freely under the watchful eyes of the Raven Guard.
"Your people are safe. The rest of you lords can be so also. Hear then once again this offer of friendship and peace, sent out into the stars by my father, the Emperor of Mankind. There is nothing to lose by your compliance, and everything to gain. Join us, and your civilization will remain as it always has been, and enveloped in a cloak of security. You shall be welcomed into the Brotherhood of Man, and protected from the dangers of this turbulent galaxy. The opportunities for trade, expansion, and enrichment are beyond anything you may have considered before."
A projector blinked. A face appeared, floating in miniature before Korax. It was rendered deliberately small, partly for reasons of space, partly so that Korax might stare down at it from imperious heights.
"We have everything to lose,"
said the ruler of 37 degrees declination.
"Our freedom, our agency, our will. You are barbarians from a broken world, come demanding tribute of your betters."
More of the spheres shone, More faces materialized, all of them bearing the high hats and festoons of beads that marked their exalted station.
"He's right," said one. "We will not yield," said another.
A minority had spoken before. Fewer still showed themselves this time, a fact that seemed to please Korax.
"There will be a new Seven Lords of Retrograde 48, chosen by the votes of its people, as has been the case for many millennia. The removal of the incumbents will be a short interruption," he said. "But there need not be a new Prince of Spinward Superior. There need not be a new Arch-Comptroller of Zenith 312, he said, naming two of the rulers who had been most vocal in opposition of compliance before. Neither had yet initiated their own broadcasts. "And there need not be a new High Counselor of 37 degrees declination. However, you can be sure there will be new rulers in all of these cities if you do not comply. I ask that you reflect on how easily these 8 cities were taken, and consider how easily the remainder may fall to my men. Ask the population here how they have been treated. You will see you have nothing to fear. Consider your own positions. Consider your own people. We will welcome your cities into the Imperium with open arms. I would prefer it if the hands of those arms held no weapons. I would prefer it if no more blood were spilt."
Korax raised the index finger of his left hand, the signal to hold transmission. The faces winked out one by one.
"We wait?" asked Bran.
The Primarch appeared to pay particular attention to everything this Bran and the other Agapito said. The commanders had a close resemblance that went beyond the enforced homogeneity of gene-seed bonds. They also had the same patronymic. Fink assumed they were true brothers.
"We wait," said Korax.
Fink kept his position on the platform. The buzz of complaining hololithic equipment merged with the whispered placations of Mechanicum adepts in an eerie hypnotic combination that denied the right of other sounds to be heard. A cathedral quiet fell, full of mumbling and the buzz of electricity. 3 minutes passed before a single self-contained sphere of light fizzled into being, displaying the lugubrious face of a man preserved beyond the span of mortal years by medical means.
"I am Wandrill, the Duke of Polar III," he said gravely. "I hear your message. Following consultation with my council, and after addressing the concerns of our population, we have decided to accept your offer. We regret our prior deafness to the reasonableness of your position, and humbly beg your forgiveness."
"I cannot forgive you, because there is nothing to forgive."
Korax's disappointment lowered behind his smile. It would be better if the leaders not beg. Having so craven a submission was suboptimal for the Primarch's purposes. A proud leader who made the choice more freely would have been ideal. A man who surrendered with honour intact was more likely to convince his peers to follow. A groveller would harden their resolve.
"You make the right choice. You are most welcome into the Imperium of Man," said Korax. "I name you brother, and—"
Wandrill's image broke apart momentarily, his face smeared sideways by jagged lateral lines that carried off his features to the left and right. It briefly snapped back into clarity.
"What? What's happening?"
said Wandrill. He looked up in alarm. The broadcast from Polar III ceased.
"My lord,"
called out a Therion aide,
"the Karanians have opened fire on Polar III.
"Show us,"
said Fink. Fink's officers competed with Korax's Therion minions to obey. Korax's men won out. A portable hololithic table was brought forward for the Primarch's benefit. A grainy image of Polar III flickered on over the dull black surface. The higher officers left the platform to crowd around it. Phased particle beams sliced into Polar III from all sides in such numbers there was more light than black in the void.
The energy shielding had already collapsed. Clouds of debris and vented gases floated around the moon. The beams would take a while to demolish Polar Three on their own. The core of the city was still whole, but the storm of hard projectiles launched as the beam weapon attack began would smash it to atoms.
"Can we save it?" asked Korax.
He tracked the incoming ordnance. Reduced so markedly in scale, they crawled across the ersatz void.
"No, my lord," said Fink,
consulting his own system cartograph displayed on a data slate held by one of his adjutants. The amount of firepower kicked out from the other cities was incredible. Polar Three, unable to manoeuvre easily, would take most of the storm as direct hits.
"We could shoot down maybe half of the missiles, perhaps a fifth of the shells and mass projectiles. The rest would get through. To achieve this modest reduction, we would have to reposition. We would leave our conquered territories vulnerable, and any run to shelter Polar Three would put the fleet in this death quadrant here. May I?"
he asked. Korax nodded. Fink dragged the information from his slate with an auto-stylus and directed it into the hololith. The death of Polar Three was replaced by a graphics-heavy strategic display of the middle system. A wide kill zone shone an angry red.
"We will be under fire from approximately 300 of the cities in this area. 400 as we neared Polar Three."
"Then a rescue mission is also impossible," said Korax.
"Regrettably so, my lord," said Fink.
He'd already calculated the risk. It was far too high.
"This is too smooth. It looks planned to me," said Agapito.
"The Karanians have the advantage of knowing each other well," said Korax. "If their intelligence is good enough, they could have anticipated one drill surrender. But it is as likely that they were poised to fire on whoever broke ranks."
"He was among the few who contemplated compliance seriously from the start," said Bran. "This is going to send a powerful message to the rest."
"My lord, there is an incoming transmission," said a communications officer.
"Display,"
said Korax. The hololith crackled. The machines pitched to a higher tone. The individual portrait fields for the thousand rulers came on at once. In the place of multiple people was a single composite face.
"Arch-Comptroller Agarth," said Korax.
The elements comprising Agarth's face were incompletely aligned. Disjointed movement rippled through the swarm of tri-D Picts that made up this gestalt man.
"Listen to me, son of the tyrant,"
said Agarth, his giant visage glowering at Korax. His eyes bulged moistly. The projection fields remained imprecisely coordinated, and his movements jumped from sphere to sphere.
"This is how we will deal with any who bow to your demands. They shall be marked as traitors by the rest. Not one city in this system will surrender to you. Begone from here. Your pathetic show capturing a handful of our confederates has changed nothing. There are yet 1,000 left. Can you stand before the full might of our guns and evade our fleet? Creeping into our kingdoms to snatch single victories will avail you nothing. We will force you to face us like men, and you will die. I say to you, son of the so-called Emperor, leave or perish."
"The Imperium is vast and powerful," said Korax. "I am but the point of the blade. You cannot resist me. You can defy my father all you wish. In the end, your compliance is inevitable. Accept it now. You are one system. I have thousands at my back. You cannot stand before us. I shall break you."
"We shall see how much blood your father is willing to expend in taking our homes from us," said Agarth. "Leave us be, before we all suffer for your aggression."
"My father would spend all the blood there is. He will not permit any human society to suffer outside his protection," said Korax. "It is his duty to bring enlightenment to the galaxy."
"We are enlightened enough," said Agarth.
"I say otherwise," said Korax.
"Then many will die," said Agarth. "How does that sit with your conscience, Saviour?"
The hololith cut out. Agarth's face disappeared in a strobed flash of deactivated bubble fields. Ribbon projectors sighed at the end of the effort of creating one coherent image from 1,000 individual displays. Fink glanced up at the Primarch. Korax radiated dissatisfaction.
"Central, tell me of Agarth. How much control does he have over the others?" Korax asked.
Is this a bluff, or do all the cities now speak with his voice?
Central, who had been conspicuously displayed near the front of the group, so the Sodality could see that his mutilations had been made good, stepped closer to speak.
Before, not very much. My impression was that the other lords were intimidated by him. His city is larger than most and better equipped for war. He is aggressive and was ill-liked. Your presence has changed the situation here greatly. He was agitating for direct confrontation with the Imperium as soon as we iterators had delivered the first offer to the Sodality Presidium. At the beginning, he was dismissed, but the destruction of 2742 made them militant. They are frightened.
The scarring of Hartin was regrettable, said Korax,
and poorly timed.
Fink's back stiffened. His expedition had been responsible for the massacre there.
But it is done, my lord, said Central. So we must deal with the consequences.
He spared a look of sympathy for Fink.
The Sodality see themselves in the same position, threatened by an external foe. Only they regard themselves as a greater power than others we have faced. They think they can win.
They have no conception of the enemies we have overcome, said Korax.
They still believe they will prevail where Hartin fell, said Central.
I will prove their confidence misplaced, said Korax.
Zenith 312 is Agarth's city. It is there we will strike next. It is the logical target. An escalating display of our abilities will shake the others' convictions. Therefore, I will lead the assault myself and bring Agarth before this hololithic projector in chains to show his fellows.
I mean no disrespect, said Central. But you underestimate their pride. We have gone past the point of convincing them.
We shall see, said Korax.
My lord, please reconsider, said Fink.
He began hesitantly, but as the words left his mouth, they grew louder. His conviction strengthened. He spread his hands out, palms down, in an emphatic gesture of disagreement.
My lord, no!
Korax looked at him oddly. There was some new respect in his expression, but a deal of anger.
You say no to me.
Fink trembled. Korax radiated calm and reasonableness, and yet even with so neutral an aspect, the power of him bore down on the Admiral. The gaze of his black eyes pressed into him.
Fink, I was sent here because you have so far failed to convince the Sodality to compliance, and have presented no military solution to force the issue. Now you say that the plan I have formulated is lacking?
Korax gave a short laugh of disbelief. He sounded almost like a normal man delivering his recrimination.
What is your objection? Asked Korax. Voice it now. Remember that you speak with the son of the Emperor.
How could Fink possibly forget that? He almost submitted to the overpowering will of the Primarch. But his people were proud. Fink stood his ground.
Agarth is correct, my lord,
said Fink, forcing himself to stare into the wells of darkness Korax had for eyes.
We face a long and costly campaign.
You do not think we can win? You do not think I can do what I have said I am going to do, said Korax.
Through the unease the Primarch engendered in him, Korax's self-belief struck Fink.
He is arrogant, thought the Admiral. That makes him rash.
Naturally, we will win,
said the Admiral measuredly.
What concerns me is how quickly and at what cost.
Korax watched him, his pale face impassive. Fink pushed on, quickening his speech before his resolve fled.
The Thousand Moons are adjusting their orbits. They are bringing themselves closer together physically and politically. Their confederated habits are vanishing in the face of our might. They are uniting. The war is changing before it has properly begun.
Fink looked to Central for support.
This is true, my lord, said Central. This system has been watched for the last century. They have before never displayed this level of cooperation. Their orbits are defined by treaty, signed at the close of their last internal war. Moving the cities is an act their culture will not take lightly. They have decided that they are going to fight against us. Whatever we do now, they will not back down, said Fink. United, they present a significant challenge. Your actions have clarified the situation, and I thank you for your intervention. It is my contention that we must strike at them in force before they fully consolidate their militaries. The time for stealth and gesture is done. We need to begin a full assault. I can have orders drafted for your approval within the hour.
There was a long pause where Korax's black eyes bored into Fink's own. A run of sweat tickled its way down from his temple, over his cheek and inside his high collar.
The cost will be too great. Hundreds of thousands will die. Many of the cities will be lost, said Korax. This Agarth must fall. We shall take his city from him. Once that is done, the rest will capitulate.
But, my lord, you are wrong, said Fink.
His back was soaking with sweat. Defying Korax was a physical effort.
The cities move slowly, but once they have reconfigured their orbits about Karanai, the difficulty of our task will be multiplied enormously. I have already run simulations of action against a better-disposed sodality. Our projected losses are here, in this report.
He took a second slate from his adjutant and held it out to the Primarch. Korax glanced at it, but did not take it.
The 27th Expedition has standing orders to push deeper into the Argylus Cluster. We are due to link with the 76th Expeditionary Fleet in 6 months. There are 4 Class 6 human societies between us and their projected path. Iterator overtures have gone well in only 2. We will not make the rendezvous if we do not act now. In the worst scenario, this fleet will be too heavily damaged to wage further war, holding up the entire line of advance for the crusade in this subsector.
Lines appeared on Korax's forehead like fractures in a white cliff about to collapse. Something in him changed, perhaps consciously, perhaps not, but Fink found himself looking up into the face of something inhuman.
I am not proposing inaction, Fink, said Korax.
His voice resonated painfully in the Admiral's skull.
You disgrace yourself. This all-out attack you propose is inefficient and will bring about the result you wish to avoid. Agarth's fall will end this. I will see to his capture personally. The decision is taken. Now leave me. You will return to your ship to await orders for the deployment of the fleet. Do you understand?
Fink's face burned with anger.
Yes, my lord,
he said, and bowed. Disaster awaited them. Korax might be a Primarch, thought Fink as he left the chamber, but he is not infallible.